What happened to music that meant something?
Like the Who at the Kingdom or Kiss at the Coliseum. Where is the Misty Mountain Hop? Where is the Smoke on the Water? Where is the Iron Man of today?
Hey, this is not a test. This is rock and roll.
Brett and Rennie Sparks perform together as the Handsome Family, and for decades they've told beautiful and intriguing stories through song. I'm Greg Kot.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis. The Handsome Family joins us in studio to play some tracks from their new album and talk with us about what it's like to be married bandmates. Then later, we'll review the new record from Lady Gaga. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions.
Dusty mesa, a looming shadow grows, hidden in the branches of the poison creoso.
This is Sound Opinions, and today's guests are the Handsome Family, a duo that has been around for two decades, Jim, married couple, Brett and Rennie Sparks. Brett handles the music, Rennie the lyrics. Been making some marvelous records. This is their 11th studio album called Unseen, just out.
You know, Greg, we've been fans for a long time, but even if folks don't recognize the name, I bet they've heard this song that's playing underneath us. It's Far From Any Road. It was used in 2014 as the theme song for HBO's much-heralded True Detective series. It was a bit of a deep cut from the Handsome Family catalog, set smack in the middle of their 2003 album, Singing Bones. We asked Brett and Rennie Sparks about the song and how a decade after its release, it became the theme song to such a critically acclaimed drama.
I thought it was kind of a novelty song. It's a tango. It was kind of the first song that we wrote that had a real desert flavor, you know, that had kind of the Nancy and Lee exchange and kind of these Calexico-sounding trumpets and stuff and all this Morricone. And it was kind of an experiment just to see if I could do that kind of thing.
You were going for that? Nancy Sinatra, Lee Hazelwood?
Yeah, oh, yeah. We were not going for a cop show theme song.
Right.
Plagiarism, basically. No, it's very, very influenced by that.
I am a stranger in your land, a wandering man, call me Sam. Oh, sir, my
so how did you become aware that they wanted to use your music like every week?
It's not anything like you'd expect it would be. We weren't on Matthew McConaughey's yacht, and he was like, hey, dude, let's talk about
high
something.
Five. There's a circle, and it never
ends. Yeah.
We got an email saying that there was some, you know, middleman that was talking about contracts to use a snippet of one of our songs for an interrogation room scene in a cop show. You know, but we were thinking, I will do anything. Just please help us. We were sinking. So, yeah, we were excited about that. And there was a PS. Maybe it also might be considered for the main title theme. So they sent us a contract saying we're okay with using it for an interrogation room scene or the main title theme. And then we didn't hear from them for a long time.
Well, there's a lot of games involved when you start working.
There's
with
a lot of people involved
with HBO and
with a new
like
show.
That.
So we were totally thinking that the last minute they're going to switch us out. And so really we found out when the show came on the air, and we were sitting there hoping, and there it was.
Wow.
Literally, we didn't know till the last minute.
Wow.
Very non-communicative.
So licensing is being talked about as, you know, the one thing that may help the music industry, or at least the people who make music in the music industry, make a living off this. What are the benefits? What are the drawbacks of having a song placed in a major cable show like that?
They didn't ask to use it for free, like everyone else, so that was good.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is, they paid, and they paid well. I mean, probably not what people assume that they paid.
But there's still
people
Spotify.
People assume I'm wealthy now.
There's still YouTube. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of ways to hear that song for free.
But the thing about saying that licensing is going to save the music industry is almost as absurd as saying that vinyl will. Mm-hmm. I mean, the problem with licensing is there just aren't that many slots. I mean, it's not like the old days when you could sell a record and actually make $5, you know, a pop.
Well, and there's the
fact
that
it's a crapshoot. It's a lottery.
You know,
it really
is. True Detective became viral, and everybody was talking about it, and people mm-hmm. were really excited about the show. But it could have came and went, and nobody could have cared.
There's
you know.
Probably a lot of theme songs that do come and go, and so we got incredibly lucky that one, they picked the song out of probably millions of songs that they tried in that opening sequence, and then two, that the show actually was watched by people and they did like the song. So those were all like incredibly amazing coincidences that you can't plan or you know count on.
Greg and I were excited to have you on the show because we want to tell the story of those 11 albums, of all these years and all these incarnations. How did a nice Jewish writer girl from Long Island hook up with this, you know, born-again Christian Baptist guy from Texas in Chicago? I mean, how did you guys meet and marry?
Well, I tell all the girls that are single, keep tequila in your purse because that's the best way to lure a man. So we actually met in New York, and he was going to school, graduate school, and I was an undergraduate, and I had tequila in my purse, and he was waiting for a date, and I showed up first, and I had something that enticed him.
I was waiting for a girl named Nadine.
By the time Nadine got there, it was too late.
So you met up in New York, yeah. And did you marry out there?
Yes, and I was always a writer trying to write stories, and he was always a songwriter trying to write songs, and we never considered collaborating for many years. We moved to Chicago, and we both were in the separate parts of our apartment trying to do our separate things, and I think you had a heavy metal band for a little while. You were trying to write straight mm-hmm. country songs for a while, and then I think...
Was it rockabilly bands? And
there was just one song where you couldn't finish the lyrics, and you're like, you're a writer, just help me with that.
I was trying to sell songs to Nashville in some kind of ridiculous, futile attempt, and I was trying to write, like, pop country songs. Pop country was a little bit different in the 90s. It was a little more tolerable.
And
tolerable.
It's really what
not
the world
much.
Needs now is more pop country. So
I had this song that was like,
helping the
baby,
universe.
I'm sorry for what I done. I wasn't looking for love, or, you know, something like some nonsense like that. And I was like, can you please help me revise these lyrics? And she revised the lyrics, and that turned into the first song that we wrote together, which was Arlene. And then the lyrics became, Arlene, I'm sorry for what I done. I wasn't looking for love till I saw your red hair in the sun. What we had could never be love, that was easy to see. But when I saw you in rats pouring coffee, something took a hold of me.
You know, and you bring in this artistic approach, you know, with the country songs, with these sophisticated lyrics. And at the time, I remember when you guys were coming up in the Chicago scene, there was still a lot of this carryover from that 80s scene, which is very noisy.
Yeah.
If you didn't have feedback in your songs, nobody wanted to pay attention.
True.
And you guys were, you know, starting to work in this country stuff into your music. And back then, the alt-country scare really hadn't started yet. I mean,
right.
It was like you were the outliers in the whole scene. Like, what are these people doing?
Yeah, I remember going to Milwaukee, and I remember showing up there, and the sound man asking me, what kind of music do you play?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, country, and it's like, you know, a curtain fell.
Yeah.
Well, these albums that the Handsome Family makes, the evolution, I think, after that first album was, you know, the sound that you have now. And the albums have been concept albums almost from the start. And at least me as a listener, grouped around this concept of unseen. Like, Randy, when you're writing these lyrics, are you thinking in terms of building on a theme in your own head, or how does that happen?
I'm usually just like desperately praying to every god and demon I can think of, please help me finish a song.
Mm-hmm.
So no, it's only afterwards that I look and find, oh, there is a theme. There was a rhyme and reason to this, but I usually am the last one to figure it out.
Yeah, I think with the name, the title Unseen came after three quarters the way through making the record. But I mean, as soon as we got that, we were skirting around that word, I think. And as soon as we hit it, we were like, yeah, that's it. Definitely.
Or things that are at the corner of your eye, flashes of color, and things that you almost glimpsed, things you may have seen but maybe didn't see, and regrets about not seeing. All those things seem to be swirling around in the songs.
So Unseen, you know, does it change at all? Like when you've, okay, so we talked about the elephant in the room with, mm-hmm. you know, the song with True Detective. People are paying attention. Does that change your approach at all in making a record in, you know, the months after that?
Well, that was another reason why we wanted to call the record Unseen, is that I think it was really an interesting experience because we have a song that we wrote about something different that was put in a very new context and made sense, but it's real, made me realize that what you want as a songwriter is to disappear completely. I want the songs to take on a life of their own. I want there to be no trace of me, and that the song can be taken in other contexts or other people can sing it. I think it's always a great thing when someone else covers your song. I feel like the song is free and it's not weighed down by my personal needs or ego. So I think that's also the greatest goal you could have as a songwriter, is to disappear completely.
Don't listen.
What if the folks making those stupid car commercials where McConaughey is doing a poor version of The Circle Goes On Forever said, we need to, of course, have Handsome Family in the car commercial?
We have a price. We can be bought.
Yeah.
We're available for weddings, funerals,
well,
whatever you
yeah,
need.
These days, things are a lot different. I mean, there are certain lines that I don't want to cross, like...
Like maybe we wouldn't want to be
like
in the car in the commercial.
Having my, face, having my face on anything.
But music can be used in different contexts, and they can work. It's okay. And the kids today don't seem to have a problem with that. I know lots of younger people who find songs in commercials, and it becomes their favorite record. So it's not the... I mean, when we were young, that was just such an awful thing. We were like,
you know
I'm
what?
Not selling out.
It still is an awful thing. It's
well,
not good. People... I mean, that's a terrible way to experience the world. You remember the Pink Moon with... Volkswagen?
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, man.
Nick Drake.
The end is near. Yeah, Nick Drake. That
But you
hurts,
can't blame people. You know? I mean, I don't know who. I think there was, it did seem like as soon as the last Ramones were dying, then suddenly the Ramones songs were being used for really weird commercials all the time. So a relative inherits stuff, and they may make different decisions than the musician would have made. You can't blame
I
want can't to
be sedated
it.
For Ambien.
That would be perfect.
Mm-hmm. How about a song? We're just chatting away here. What are you guys going to play? Or something from Unseen?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, let's do the curmudgeon song.
Oh, yeah.
Then,
this
since
is,
we're on the
this
topic.
This is a song about back in the days
it's
when you could
connected.
Sell out. It's about the 1980s, and it was inspired by my niece, who is 22, and she one day confessed to me that she didn't know what clockwise was. And I realized you don't really need to know which way clockwise is anymore.
This is called Back in My Day. We had maps that unfolded back in my day. You could drink from the river. We had gods made of clay. There were mile high glaciers, no locks on the doors. The sun burned brighter. We never counted past four. And the birds were always watching. There were monsters in the sea. We were watching. Longer and deep.
the sun, and music sounded better recorded on rings of ice. And as the songs turned to water, we couldn't help but cry. Way back in the good days, you're too young to have seen when everything was better, darker and deep.
Back in My Day by the Handsome Family from the new album Unseen. Brett and Randy, when I listen to that song, and I think it's easy to sort of say, oh, you know, we're making fun of the new person who doesn't understand how great it was when I was growing up, or you're making fun of that person singing the song because yeah. they're clearly living in the past. What I hear, though, is sort of a sense of empathy a little bit. The way the performance is, like, there's a sadness here.
Yeah.
Like, this person is living in the past, and it's so sad that they can't. Whenever I hear somebody talk like that, I go, I feel really bad for you.
Well, it is a little inspired by Brett here, because Brett says to me, like, every other day, one day I'm really going to learn how to use Twitter.
Tell him, learn that
tweeting. Just tweet. You don't have to learn anything. You can do it.
Then I get so enraged. I just can't follow through.
But then I was mentioning that at a show, and this woman came up to me and said, you know, who was about our age, and she said, well, I just bought a book called Twitter for Dummies, and it's really helpful. So maybe he should get that.
My name I don't remember. Dark hole I found behind my barn.
When we come back, we'll talk with the Handsome Family about the bittersweet nature of their songs and the unusual reaction from a disgruntled fan because of it. That's coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Stop for coffee in the redwood forest. Giant dripping leaves, spoons of powder cream. I wanted to kiss you, but I wasn't sure how. Like those stay out of your way.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot. And today we're talking with the Handsome Family, a long-running duo that makes these novelistic, masterful mini sweets, otherwise known as country pop songs. One of their trademarks is a great sense of humor and a real wit and cleverness in their lyrics, the ability to balance different emotions, different feelings, and to tell stories. I wanted to know the importance of humor in their music.
To me, it's everything.
Essential.
I think if I can't laugh, I'm going to, self-destruct. So I'm very happy to. But that's my coping mechanism, being the class clown. But I think most comedians are usually pretty sad people. So the two are pretty linked, I think.
Well, I think there's a lot of layers and complexity to the music. And it's beautiful music, and at the same time, I always found it very odd, like, why isn't this more popular? You know, what is intriguing to me is it's not difficult music to like, but I think a lot of it is that there is that ambiguity there, too, the complexity, and people are like, are they being funny, or are they being serious?
We just had an experience with that.
Do you have your letter with you?
I'm not going to read it.
Oh, yeah, you can't read it.
We played at the Old Town School the other day, and it was a great show for us. It was sold out, and it was just felt like the room was full of love, and everybody seemed to be right with us. And I came home, and there was this irate email from someone who said, I've seen you many times in Chicago, and I was really disappointed with the show because so many people were laughing. And I felt like they were being disrespectful. I've seen you before when people were quiet, and that's what I expected. And he kept saying, well, what about this song? Is that supposed to be funny?
This person was very upset.
Mm-hmm.
Upset enough to write a long email about...
He blamed me because he said, you're setting the songs up too humorously, and that's allowing people to...
jovial between the songs, and people are laughing. You're creating an environment...
And I think
people don't respect what you're doing.
Some people want things in categories. Is this a happy song or a sad song?
Yeah.
Pick one. You can't have both. And to me, that's so strange because life is always mixed up.
And you've always done that.
I can't understand reality in another way. I've never felt 100% one way or another. And when I hear songs that are just jubilant in words and jubilant in melody, I feel kind of distant from them because I've never been that jubilant. But
you'd have a hit. Come on.
But also when I hear songs that are really, really dark in lyric and also in melody, I kind of start giggling because they seem just too dark to me. So I'm always looking for the balance that feels like life feels to me.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear another song. What do you want to play next from Unseen or anything else you want to play?
It's a song called Octopus.
One, two, three, four. The octopus has three hearts. It lives in caves. Fisherman can tell you when an octopus waves its arms, it hypnotizes schools of fish, all movement stops for miles. And even the waves stand still, all the witnesses have sworn, and it's impossible. I know that no one has to know if I take an evening stroll down to the edge of the wooden pier where the water is deep and cold. Yeah. Shadow rising up above the rooftops and the streets.
all the boats fall off the world into the octopus's eye. That's why I know I shouldn't go on the cruise across the sea. Cause I know that no one has to know if I take an evening stroll down to the end of the wooden pier where the water is deep and cold. That's why I try and stay away from seashore holidays. And I know that no one has to know if I take an evening stroll down to the end of the wooden pier where the water is.
Octopus.
I love that.
By the Hanson Family, live on Sound Opinions. Hanson Family's Brett and Rennie Sparks and Alex McMahon and Jason Toth backing them up.
I do like this song just because, to me, the octopus is an amazing creature. And there was a new article, I think it was in Scientific American, that I read it, like in the last few months, that has said definitively that the octopus has the most unique DNA of any creature, any animal that we've studied. So they probably are from outer space, and they probably are just waiting to take over this planet. It's a slow burn attack.
You appeared upon the white shore on a dark and moonless eve. I led you through the stone gate.
Our listeners who have not seen you two perform live, it's kind of like an ongoing conversation between the music and what's said between the songs on stage. And it's almost like the stuff between the songs could be its own album. You know.
Sometimes.
And it's a Family After Dark.
But there's this conversation going on, and it's one of those don't try this at home, kids. You know, build an artistic career out of a collaboration with your wife or your husband. It's not an easy thing to do, and I know you've been asked this question before, but it seems like rather than growing apart, you guys have grown like into, you know, I hate to say the same person, but you guys finish each other's thoughts in a way that's kind of eerie. Yeah, and the way I'm just thinking about the way, Brett, the way you sing Rennie's words right from the start in this album just pulled me in right away. There's this sort of sonorous, easy quality to it, and at the same time, I'm going, these are not easy words to sing. It's like make a melody out of that, you know?
That's a great compliment.
I think we're saving up money to become conjoined twins, but it's an expensive surgery.
That doesn't come naturally. I mean, it should sound natural and effortless, but it definitely doesn't come naturally. I mean, we revise a lot, and we work on the way
and argue quite a bit.
We work on the way the lyrics work with the music a lot, and we argue a lot about that.
But the thing that's good is that if we, you know, we argue and it can get really intense and mean, but if we really did break up the band, you know, we have to divide the silverware, we have to divide the books and the records, so there's things that tie us together.
The tale to me, too, is inspiring on the level of the self-contained operation. I mean, you have this studio in your home. You've done that. I think you did that in Chicago, and you're doing it in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. You're in a lot of ways very self-contained in the way you make music. You bring in collaborators like Alex and Jason, but you play most of the instruments. Rennie, you do the artwork and the lyrics. It's like a little, you know, two-person shop for the most part with collaborators.
Yeah, we used to visualize that when we first got married. If only we could have a little shop and just work together all day and just hang out. I mean, we did used to have this fantasy. Like, wouldn't it be nice if we just...
I think we both have a lot of OCD.
Start a music store or something.
We're both
music factory.
We like to control things and we like to order things. So I think it's hard for us to collaborate with a bigger group of people. But
yeah, I don't play well with others, so I mean...
You don't even play well with me, but we've worked it out.
Well, and again, another irony in the Hanson Family is it always sounds as if the two of you sat down and had a hootenanny. It never sounds methodically constructed. I mean, the records sound great, but they don't sound overcooked.
We've never had a hootenanny.
That's totally the goal. I mean, it's very deliberate and calculated almost, but yeah, it should sound spontaneous and like it tepid love.
We are living in an age of wonders where you can record so many things so easily by yourself that, you know, it seems ridiculous to not make use of that.
A lot of things because we've known you so long. So, meet in New York, move to Chicago, band starts in Chicago, been in New Mexico now how many years?
16.
And this new album, wow. Unseen, really is resonant of New Mexico. I heard it was inspired, I've read you say in interviews,
yeah.
Inspired by your current locale.
Yeah, there, you know, there, it's a strange place. It's wide open, there's parking everywhere, there's very few people there, it's cheap to live, and yet we have all this strange violence all the time for no reason at all. People just drive their cars into each other, stab each other. It doesn't have to happen. We have very little reason for it except for maybe too much sunlight.
So how does New Mexico resonate in your writing these days?
Well, I find the sky there, the light is so nourishing. The light there is always gorgeous and always makes me feel bigger, like there's a bigger world out there. So you can see for hundreds of miles. Sometimes you can see mountain ranges full of snow even when it's 100 degrees out. And to me, that's a really nice feeling, to feel always connected to the fact that you're on a spinning planet in a universe. And even when I'm in the parking lot of Walmart, I can see that I'm on a planet spinning around in a solar system, and that's helpful.
Rennie, you told me once a while ago that you felt like songs were like dreams. And I don't know if you remember that quote.
Stand by the statement.
That was a great statement, and I thought your records sound like that to me. And it's hard to like put your foot, you know, finger on it, but there's an atmosphere. And I don't know if you agree or not. Do you feel like what you're, you know, it's a beautiful sound, but it is very much your sound. Like even the room, you know, has this, you know, you can feel the room being part of that sound that you created.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Somebody's coming to you and said, I want to do what you do. What would you tell them? And would you say, you know?
First, you got to have tequila in your purse.
Yeah, right.
No. I think what I would say to people is think about where the song lives. In a cave, in a living room, on a ship, on the sea, in the desert, on top of a mountain, whatever. And those kind of choices will dictate a lot of things about the arrangement. For example, the first song on Unseen is a song called Gold. The first line of the third verse was like, got a tattoo of a snake and a ski mask on my face. And I was just like, no. That's the first line of a record. I
mean,
it's yeah.
Like, boom. That jumped out at
I mean,
me right away.
It's
yeah.
just a 1-2 punch. It's like
a
the
lot
perfect
of
way to
really
start.
Really atmospheric, abstract-y kind of lyrics before that.
Building up to that moment, it's just like, for that just to come out of the blue is, you know, I think a great way to start a record.
But then you got to be able to recognize it.
Yeah, it's hard to do with yourself, but sometimes even if you don't have someone else you trust to work with, even if you just put things away for a few weeks and come back to them, you can often see them with colder eyes that are more critical.
Yeah. What about the practical side of what Greg asked about the way you're able to do? Do you guys have to work? Do you do other work still, or are you just, you know, I want to picture you, you know, in a mountain, on top of a mountain in New Mexico, just creating all day, painting or writing or
yeah.
recording.
We're lucky to do that.
You know, 25 years, almost a quarter century of doing this. Does music pay your living?
Well, it wasn't like we had some triumphant moment where we said, take this job and shove it. It was basically that we ended up getting fired from every job we had because we kept going away. And so gradually, if you continue down this path of music, you're going to be unqualified for anything else.
Unlucky.
Yes.
So in other words, yeah. We
have to make it work
make
out.
We do make a
but
living.
But we do, yeah. We're living, we're solidly
We live
okay,
modestly,
in New Mexico.
But, you know.
Yeah, I think, yes, in some interviewer in New Mexico came to our house and he described our house as modest.
Modest.
So, yeah, but it's our house.
We live in a little house in New Mexico. We're comfortable, you know. We have
room to record and I have room
we're
to
happy,
paint.
We're
happy.
It's what we need.
That's really all you can ask for as an artist.
We're here with the Hanson family on Sound Opinions, Brett and Rennie Sparks. What are we going to hear next?
How about one of those fresh songs? Were you going to play Gold or what were you going to play?
We can.
Gold is an amazing song.
Gold's a great song.
That's a stunner.
Okay, well, you want to start it? Yeah, go ahead. Got a tattoo of a snake and a ski mask on my face, but I woke up in a ditch behind the stop and go, lying in the weeds with a bullet in my gut, watching dollar bills fly away in the dust. But the sun's sinking down, spilling gold on the ground, but I'm going out tonight, out past the last lights of town. Oh, oh, oh. There was a girl with dark eyes and hair shining black, and it ran like a river wild down her back. But these wide empty streets and the air shaking with heat, they made me hungry, hungry to do something mean. But the sun's sinking down, spilling gold on the ground, but I'm going out tonight, out past the last lights of town. Coyotes they moan, and the wind's rolling beer cans down the street. But the sun's sinking down, spilling gold on the ground, but I'm going out tonight, out past the last lights of
I love it. Gold by the Handsome Family, live on Sound of Music. You know what that is? The kickoff
Absolutely.
Track on Unseen, 11 albums into the Handsome Family's career.
Whew.
It's been our pleasure to have the Handsome Family here on Sound Opinions. Brett and Rennie Sparks, Jason Toth on drums, Alex McMahon on keys. Thank you so much, guys.
Oh, it's a great pleasure for us. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
That wraps up our chat with the Handsome Family, and now we want to hear from you. Call us with your thoughts and opinions on the Handsomes or anything in the musical world at 888-859-1800. Leave us a message and we might play it on the air. We've also got exclusive video of the Handsome Family at soundopinions.org. When we come back, we'll share our opinions on the latest release from Lady Gaga and, lo, these 16 months into a seemingly endless presidential campaign, I have an appropriate Desert Island Jukebox pick. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Seen a fish leap up from a quiet stream, shine.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis, and that's a track called Diamond Heart from the latest Lady Gaga record, Joanne. Lady Gaga, a decade ago, she was playing in rock clubs in New York City, called her first album The Fame, basically presaging the idea that she would become a superstar. And that record in 2008 did indeed make her a superstar with chart-topping singles like Just Dance and Poker Face, immediately followed with more hits, Bad Romance, Telephone, Alejandro. A series of reinventions followed. I mean, if you think about this decade-long career, she's done a bunch of things. She's been a rocker, a Euro disco, anti-diva, this art pop singer on the art pop album in 2013, jazz vocalist. She duetted with Tony Bennett for a Grammy-winning album called Cheek to Cheek in 2014. She starred in American Horror Story Hotel, won a Golden Globe Award for that, has sold 27 million albums. Now comes her latest reinvention, an album called Joanne. Here's the title track from Lady Gaga on Sound Opinions.
Take my hand. Stay Joanne, heaven's not ready for you. Every part of my aching heart needs you more than the angels do.
That's the title track of Joanne, Lady Gaga's fifth album. Greg, it's about an aunt who was a victim of sexual assault and who died of lupus before Gaga was born. At various times, she has said that this album thematically is about family and looking back and considering her place in the world. At other times, she said it's about whatever was happening in her life and on her mind at the moment. It's sort of scattered thematically. Gaga has been a scattered artist, I think, throughout her career from the beginning. She has jumped from genre to genre. She has tried many things. At times it has worked. At other times it's just been a mess. The pop album, even the hardcore little monsters, what she calls her fans, had a really hard time defending that record. The other thing about Gaga, so always unfocused, but also provocative. But it's never really been in the music. The music's never been as experimental and provocative as her public image. You know, we think of the meat dress. We think of the vomit performance art stunt. On stage and in public appearances, it's been over the top. It's been button pushing. It's been in the great tradition of Andy Warhol and David Bowie and Madonna. But musically, some of it has been exciting and some of it not. I gotta say, you know, Gaga bores me on this record. For all of the stylistic genre jumping, one minute she's doing a country song, and by country I mean like 1993 Shania Twain glam country.
Lights, hollering over rubber, spinning, big swig, toss another beer can to lit tonight, praying on the moonlight. Every John is just the same.
that we opened up this segment with. Diamond Heart is powered, several are, by the great Josh Homme, you know, of Queens of the Stone Age. But this endless list of guests, Beck co-wrote a song with her, you know, she seems to be searching for inspiration from them rather than using these great talents to help enhance a vision she had. It's a real mess all over the map, this album. Boy, it's a trashed album. I'm sorry. There's few moments that you might enjoy when you hear them on the radio, but there is no need to dig any deeper.
Well, Jim, I think it's really clear what she's doing here, actually. I think building off of what she did with Tony Bennett on Cheek to Cheek in, on that Jazz Duets record in 2014, she's trying to prop up her musical chops. She's trying to say, hey, look, I'm a real artist. I'm not this kind of image-making anti-diva. It's all about style rather than substance. There's real substance to what I do.
It's kind of hard to do after you've worn a meat dress.
And I think her choice of producer is very telling on this. She's hooked up with Mark Ronson, the UK producer who worked with Amy Winehouse and then Bruno Mars on that track, yeah. Uptown Funk. He's a very retro-style guy. He's referencing 60s, 70s, 80s soul and funk references and updating them for a new generation of listeners who weren't around for the original thing.
His work can be really interesting.
And, you know, at the same time, I think Ronson is kind of, you know, stuck in a retro past, and Gaga clearly wants to go there. Hence, we have these little genre exercises, the country song John Wayne you referenced. Other songs like Come to Mama. This is a Bruce Springsteen song done as a Broadway tune. That's a really embarrassing combination of influences.
Yeah.
Disappointing record for Lady Gaga. I was a big fan, especially of the first two records, and I considered her a really radical twist and risk taker in the whole pop scene. But now she seems like she's falling back on very rote exercises in nostalgia mongering, and it's a weak record. It's a trash it.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
Remember, we were shipwrecked together.
As often as possible on Sound Opinions, we like to take a trip to that desert island, pop a quarter in the Desert Island Jukebox, play a track we cannot live without. Jim, this week it's your turn.
Well, Greg, you know, the 2016 presidential campaign seems to have been going on since sometime in the 1800s. Some people say 16 months, some people say 24 months. Sometimes it's helpful to step outside of our perspective as citizens of the United States. The big miniatures hobby show that I enjoy, my geek nerdy pastime, was this weekend. And we have people travel to Chicago for it every year from around the world. And I was in a group of friends that included somebody from Malta, the island of Malta, from Sweden, and from the UK. And their response was, will it ever end? Will this ever end? Why do you Americans drag it out like this, right? So I was thinking about a song to kind of capture the malaise we're all feeling, the please, whatever side you're on, just make it end, will you? And I came up with The Clash, 1977, that incredible debut album, one anthem after another, one incredibly melodic and motivating song after another. The one I'm thinking of is I'm So Bored with the USA. We even are. You know, America, love it or leave it. Okay, fine. I'm just tired. Get this over with. Let's go on to something new. I didn't realize this until I dug into the history, but it started out as a Mick Jones song, and it was an anti-love song. A woman had broken his heart, and it was originally, and there were recordings of it at this way, I'm So Bored with You.
I'm so bored.
But Joe Strummer misheard it, as I'm so bored with the USA, and rewrote some of the lyrics for a lot of topical references. Yankee soldiers are always on the TV. Let's hear the Watergate tapes. It's just a brilliant song. No malice to the country we all love. But boy, even the most patriotic of us can get bored sometimes. The Clash, 1977, the self-titled debut. I'm so bored with the USA. One of the many immortal anthems from The Clash, 1977, I'm So Bored with the USA. Greg, what do we have on the show next week?
Jim, it's time for another Sound Opinions classic album dissection. Next week, the subject is going to be Marvin Gaye's classic, What's Going On, 45 years after it was made.
Greg, we have some thank yous to say on the way out. Mary Gaffney helmed the session with the Handsome Family, and Andrew Gill and Paula Friedrich shot our video. And Sound Opinions is produced by Brendan Banaszak, Evan Chung, and Alex Claiborne. On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800.
Messages.
Hi, Jim and Greg. I have no problem with Bob Dylan getting the Nobel Prize. Monumental dude in world song history. But I just have this gnawing suspicion that they picked the wrong guy. The guy they should have picked was Leonard Cohen. Better writer, a true literary person. He's written books. He's written songs. I like the Dylan pick, but they got the wrong guy. Should have been Leonard Cohen. Thanks.
Hi, this is Bob from Apex, North Carolina. Now that Bob Dylan has received the Nobel Prize, what about Lou Reed? Thanks.
You know what they say about being nice to the right people on the way up? Sooner or later, you're gonna meet them on.
I think Bob Dylan is a real artist and deserves it. It's literature, it's poetry. I wish he would go because we're proud of him. like he's my son and doesn't want to go on the graduation line and stand in his robe. And the father would be very proud of him. I wish he would. But all right, thanks for the opportunity.
Hey, fellas. My name is Per. I'm calling from Portland, Oregon. And I think that the best, creepiest Halloween or just creepy song in general is Psycho, written by Leon Payne. I think the Eddie Nowak version is the best.
I woke up in Johnny's room, Mama, standing right by his bed, with my hands near his throat, Mama, wishing both of us was dead. You think I'm psycho, don't you, Mama? I just killed Johnny's pup.
So understated, so beautiful, so creepy, and it makes me so very happy. Great show. Always love it. Bye.
Hi, this is Skylar calling from Chicago. Randy Newman has a song, I think it's called In Germany Before the War. It starts off, In Germany Before the War in 1934, there was a man who owned a store in Dusseldorf. And it is one of the most unnerving, creepiest, haunting, disturbing songs you've ever heard.
I'm looking at the river, but I'm thinking of the sea. I'm thinking of the sea. I'm looking at the river, but I'm thinking of the sea.
Thanks so much. Love the show. This is Vicki Engel from San Francisco. A song that really creeped me out when I was a little girl, and we used to listen to the 45s on the record players, was one called Timothy. And it was all about a group of people that have to resort to cannibalism. And poor Timothy becomes the dinner that they have to eat. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. No more messages.
To share your opinions on Sound Opinions, call 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.